Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Mem Vav 228. Okay, last time we were learning that Yosef interpreted Pari's dream. Yosef tells Pari, you need to get a leader to gather all the grain and put them away. And Pari says to his people, listen, I've never found such a smart guy like you. And like we learned last time that Yosef had to learn 70 languages in one night, which he did. The Malach Gavriel came and taught him 70 languages. Pari said to him, listen, you're the boss of the whole land. I'm the only one that's over you. And he gave him his ring. He gave him this linen garments. And he gave him a wife. Who was his wife? Asnas. Okay? The first Pari, you know what? We really should start Memhei again. 1 second. We got my chumash. I mean, it's there. 1 second.
Memhei.
There's no class.
I mean, the week before.
Okay. So what happened is, Pari called Yosef. The spot pasuk mem hey. Vayikra Pari shem Yosef. Pari called Yosef's name. He gave him an Egyptian name, so to speak. He didn't want to give him the Hebrew name of Yosef. So he also, as we see lahavdil by a lot of non-Jewish people, that when you become a king, they give you a new name. Or lahavdil a pope, they give you a new name. Or the leaders would get a new name. So Pari had to give Yosef a new name. And what was he called? He called him Tzafnas Paneach. Tzafnas Paneach literally means the one that explains the hidden things.
The code.
Huh?
The code. Like, break the code.
Basically, that they got it from this, by the way. But Tzafnas Paneach is, by the way, the one who reveals and interprets the hidden secrets. Because Pari had a dream, the interpretation of the dream was hidden. So Yosef interpreted the dream. So therefore Yosef, he called him the name Tzafnas Paneach. Okay? Now, the Ramban, the expression Tzafnas Paneach comes from the word Amfaneach Nalomim, explainer of the secrets. Now, the question is, if Tzafnas Paneach is a Hebrew word, how in the world did Pari call him a Hebrew name? So,
you don't pronounce the Ein here? Paneach, it's not like
Vedeshva.
It's Paneach.
Vedeshva, so
it's a silent Ein. It's not Paneach, it's Paneach. I mean, it's with a Shva, so you can't pronounce it any other way. Now, some of us want to learn that Pari gave him the Hebrew name Tzafnas Paneach in respect to Yosef. Another interpretation, which is a simple interpretation, that he called him a name in Egyptian that in Hebrew means Tzafnas Paneach. Just like when Moshe Rabbeinu was called Moshe. And he said, why did he call him Moshe? Ki min amayim mishisihu. He drew him out of the water. So all the commentators in Parsha Shmos ask, but Moshe is a Hebrew word, and Pari's daughter didn't speak Hebrew. So some of Hashem answered, she called him a Hebrew name, an Egyptian name, that in Hebrew is Moshe. So it could be also here simply that he called him a name that in Egyptian, in Hebrew would mean Tzafnas Paneach, but it was really an Egyptian name. But the Ramban learns that he called him the name basically out of respect to him. He gave him the name in Hebrew. Okay, also, what did he do? He changed his name to Tzafnas Paneach, and he gave him as Asnas Bas Feitifera Koyenein, Asnas, the daughter of Feitifera, who is a priest of Ein Leisha, and Yosef went out as a leader over Eretz Mitzrayim. This is the simple meaning of the pasuk. Now, the Mefarshim say, who was this Asnas? So 2 weeks ago we were discussing. Some Mefarshim learn it was Feitifera's daughter. Even though the Mefarshim asked, we learned before that Fetifar was castrated, he couldn't have any children. So they learned he had this girl before they castrated him. Okay, that's one interpretation.
Who castrated?
In Egypt, whatever. Whoever did it. Another interpretation is that it wasn't really his daughter, it was his adopted daughter. And who was she? She was Asnas, who was Dina's daughter, like we learned 2 weeks ago. When Shechem raped Dina, she became pregnant and she gave birth to this girl. And they sent her away to Mitzrayim, like we discussed 2 weeks ago. So Asnas was the one that Yosef married. Now, why is the Torah emphasizing that he gave him Asnas Pasveti Fera? Who cares? He didn't have Asnas. He gave him Asnas. Why is the Torah saying he gave him to the daughter of Peti Fera, and he was a Kohenai? So the Mefarshim explain very simply. Yosef was really the slave of Fetifar, who was Fetifera. Now, because he sinned, because they accused him of fooling around with wanting to fool around with the wife of Fetifar, so they threw him into jail. Now that Pari let him go, so what's going to be? Fetifar is going to come along and say, hey, 1 minute, he's my slave, what are you doing with him? He's mine. I own him.
I thought Fetifar was Pharaoh.
No. Fetifar was the head of the butchery. When Yosef was sold to Egypt, remember the brother sold him? Who bought him in Egypt? This guy Fetifar. Then, after a year in Fetifar's house, Fetifar's wife wanted to be with Yosef. And that whole story. So because of that, he was thrown into prison. And then he interpreted the butler in the baker's dream. And then he was kept, you know, the whole story.
Oh, I thought he wanted to be with
Pharaoh. No. Fetifar's wife. So, Pari was smart. Pari said, if I marry him off to his daughter, he's not going to come along later and say, he's my slave. Then that's what the mother-in-law does, not the father-in-law. So he was safe from Fetifar coming and saying that this is my slave. Other Mefarshim learn, why is the Torah emphasizing that Pari gave him to Fetifar, to marry him off to Fetifar's daughter? To show Yosef's innocence. Because if Yosef would be guilty, Pari wouldn't let him marry Fetifar's daughter. And in fact, the Medrash says that this Asnas knew that her mother was the guilty one and Yosef was innocent. She knew that. And she went around proclaiming Yosef's innocence. And because of that, she merited that Yosef married her.
But if there's an order from the king, can Fetifar do it again? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if it's legally his slave, you know what type of commotion still he'll make? Hey, this is my slave, what are you taking away my slave?
Mm-hmm. She was Jewish?
Even for the king?
Well, according to the opinion that says she was Dina's daughter, she was Jewish.
Yeah, she was Dina's daughter.
But different opinions, not everybody says it.
You're saying she was Fetifar's daughter?
Either a daughter or adopted daughter. One opinion says it was his natural daughter.
His natural daughter, she's not Jewish.
And who did Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Yehuda marry?
Zipporah.
And Moshe's wife, Zipporah.
What about?
Before the Torah was given, anybody that believed in God was kosher for the Jews. I'll give you an example. Yitzchak married Rivka. Rivka was Bisuel's daughter. She wasn't Jewish. But she believed in God. She was religious. So therefore he was allowed to marry.
Did Yosef keep Torah and Mitzvah?
Questionable. But the assumption is that he did.
They didn't convert this
God. If they kept Torah...
But before Matan Torah, what was the definition of a Jew?
Yeah, but the point is, if you kept Torah, the Torah says that any woman, in order for her to be Jewish, has to come from a Jewish mother.
Yeah, but I'm saying before Matan Torah, the definition of a Jewish woman was one that believed in God.
No need for conversion.
Conversion. They accepted one God. They didn't have to keep all the mitzvahs like the others did.
And this one God was the same God that
Jews
believed in?
Yeah. I mean, at least what Rivka believed in, what Rachel and Leah believed in, what those people believed in, yeah.
So the highest level was to have faith in God.
At that time, that was considered Jewish.
Mm-hmm. When Pharaoh believed in God, it says because he tells Yosef that since your God has given you this information.
Yeah, but that's because Yosef said to him that.
Exactly.
At the moment, it doesn't mean Pharaoh believed in God. Yosef kept telling him, this is not me, this is God, God, God. So he said, well, then if that's the case, you're a godly man in your opinion, fine.
They always believed in God, it's just they thought it's a way, it's God. God is out of picture.
We discussed a few weeks ago this whole thing at great length, that Pari believed in the natural level of God, not in the supernatural level of God. But I don't want to go into the whole thing again. But he believed in a certain level of limited God. He believed in. Okay, Vayetze Yosef al Eretz Mitzrayim, and Yosef went out over the land of Egypt. What does it mean? What do you mean he went out over the land of Egypt? When he left this meeting with Pare, he went out in a way that he was already the leader. He went in being a slave. I mean, this is one meeting. How long do you think the meeting took? As long as it took Yosef to interpret the dreams, right? So Yosef says, but Yosef went in a slave. He comes out this big leader of Egypt. So the pasuk of Vayetze Yosef al Eretz Mitzrayim. Another opinion says he went out over the whole land, meaning announcements were made over the whole entire land that Yosef now became the leader. That's what the simple meaning. Now, how old was Yosef when this happened? And we'll learn why it's important to know how old Yosef was. So pasuk mem vav says Vayesef ben shleishim shana. Yosef was 30 years old. When he was standing before Pari, Yosef was 17 years old. What? I mean, it's 30.
Sorry.
I want to see if you're listening. Yosef was 30 years old when he was standing before Pari. Why is it important? Why is it important for us to know that Yosef was 30 years old? So this helps us to figure out how long Yosef was away from his father. And this also teaches us that Yaakov learned in yeshiva 14 years earlier. What does this mean? Yosef was sold when he was 17. The pasuk said before he was a 17-year-old kid. The father sent him to see how the brothers are doing. The brothers grabbed him, sold him, and so on. Now, Yosef was 30 when he interpreted the dream. Then he had the 7 years of plenty, the 2 years of hunger, and that's when Yaakov came down to Egypt. So at the time Yaakov came down to Egypt, Yosef was 39. And he left at 17. So that teaches us that Yosef was away from home for 22 years. According to that reckoning, and we learned, and we know, that why was Yosef away from his father 22 years? Because Yaakov was punished because he was away from his father for 22 years. But if you reckon, you find out that Yaakov was away from his parents not 22 years, but 36 years. If you just reckon the years. So from there we learn out that 14 years he spent in yeshiva on the way. And for those 14 years that he was studying Torah, he wasn't punished. So therefore the age of Yosef is important to know. Number one. Number two, that's one interpretation.
Yosef wasn't punished 36 years?
22 only. He wasn't punished. No, because he was taken away. He didn't go away. Yaakov went away. Yosef was taken away. So he wasn't punished. It was against his will. Now, Yosef, another Abarbanel says, why is it important to know that Yosef was 30 years old? To show another way of this is the hand of God. That a 30-year-old kid should become the leader of the entire Egypt was not a normal occurrence. If you're only 30 years old. Nevertheless, the fact that teaches us that that Yosef was a divine providence. Now also, he also teaches us, by the way, another thing it says, that Yosef was in the house of Potiphar for a year before he was thrown into prison. Because basically then by all the cheshbonos you figure it out. Another thing that the Mefarshim point out, that but from this we figure out also that Yitzchok died 12 years after Yosef was sold. Yeah. That Yitzchok died 12 years after Yosef was sold. Because if you figure out how old Yitzchok was when he had Yaakov, and how old Yaakov was when he had Yosef, and the whole reckoning, so we see that Yitzchok died at 180, 12 years after Yosef was sold. And these are all important calculations and reckonings to figure out how the whole sequence of events.
A year before he was, before he became a king.
No, it's 12 years after he was sold.
Sure.
One second. So, if he was away 22 years minus 9, is 11.
But he is 30, if he's becoming a king at 30.
Right.
So 13 years, I mean, it's from 17 to 30.
Right. It's 13.
13 years.
Right.
So a year before he became king?
Correct.
Grandfather died.
Correct.
Yes, sir.
Right. Right. In other words, a year before the 7 years of plenty started.
Correct.
And that's why we said before that Yitzchok knew that Yosef was still alive, and therefore Yitzchok didn't cry that Yosef was killed or missing. He cried because Yaakov was sad. Because like Rashi said before, Yitzchok said, if God doesn't want him to know, how could I tell him? We're soon going to learn a question, if we get there today, that the Mefarshim will ask, that why didn't Yosef tell his father he's alive? So while he was a slave or in jail, I understand that he couldn't tell him, right? But as soon as Yosef became king at 30, Yaakov didn't know he was alive for 9 years later, right?
Yeah, he came
7 years of plenty and 2 years of hunger. Then when Yaakov came down, that's when he found out Yosef was still alive, when he was about to come down. So from the time Yosef was a king at 30 until 39 years old, which was 9 years, that Yaakov was suffering because he thought Yosef was dead and he wasn't. So then the question is, now that he had the ability as a king to do whatever he wanted, why didn't he at least send a messenger home and say, hey father, I want you to know I'm alive, come see me. Huh? So that we'll learn the answer is because it was a ban from God, from the brothers, so to speak, I'm sorry, that they included God in the ban, and until God took off the ban, Yosef was stuck with the ban himself. I'll explain later. What?
What's the ban?
1 second. What?
I don't understand your sentence.
1 second. Yeah. Hello?
Can I ask a silly question? How were they able to calculate years at that time?
What do you mean?
Depends on the new paper. What do you know?
I mean, how are they calculating a year?
How do you calculate your years?
Egypt was the founding.
What do you mean? Well, I mean, why don't you have a day?
Can't you
have X amount of days in a year? And what's the problem?
How did they know? Like when they started the year.
What do you mean? People didn't have years in those days?
No,
of course they
did.
Yeah, but I'm saying Bechlal, even forget Egypt. People, civilized or uncivilized people, knew. Had time.
They had time
and dates.
Everybody, how old it was, Adam and all these
things.
No, but it's how, that's what Taylor says. He wants to know how the people know. Hello, John. Why can't the people know?
I don't know how they would know. History knows like the Torah.
How did they travel? I mean, how did they, you know? What should be a problem?
Should have interrupted my question. Okay. Can you repeat your last sentence before my husband?
We didn't get to the answer. Because the answer is going to come later.
But I didn't get the question.
The question, why Yosef didn't tell his father he's alive. 9 years from the time Yosef became a king until he saw his father was 9 years. Right? 9 years, Yosef knew Yaakov was suffering. So we understand, while he was a slave, he didn't have the ability to do it. While he was sitting in prison, he couldn't send the fax. The question is, now that he's free and the king, why can he call home or send a fax or an email and say, Father, I'm alive for 9 years?
Because he learned.
No, because he wasn't allowed to. And if tzaddikim are not allowed to do it, they don't do it, even if it's more convenient to do it.
How did you know that he wasn't allowed to?
Yeah. We'll see later, we'll learn later, how he took off the ban. How the ban was removed, and how Yosef knew the ban was removed. And the second the ban was removed, Yosef Taka right away sent the brothers to say to the Yaakov that he's alive.
Can't you tell us now?
I mean, then what am I going to tell you later?
Well, later, that means we're going to get to that point in 3 years.
Not 3 years. half a year.
We learned it.
We did learn it by the pit.
We learned that 12 years ago.
No, we didn't.
The Torah is infinite. What are you speaking about?
The answer is, okay. The answer, hello. You want to know the answer?
I
have pity on you. I don't want you to suffer for 3 years. Okay, the answer is as follows. There are different answers. But the Rebbe answers an answer, and I see that some other Mefarshim say the same answer. When the brothers sold Yosef as a slave, the brothers were afraid that some of them are going to have a change of heart and tell Yaakov what happened, and they're all going to be messed up. So what did the brothers do? They decided to make a ban, a chedem, meaning a ban of excommunication, that they would all be bound by that ban. Oh. Now, in order to make a chedem, a ban like that, you need 10 people, a minion. Now, there are 12 brothers, right? We learned already, Reuven was not there. That's why he wasn't there when Yosef was sold. Binyamin, we learned already, was too young for the father to send him anywhere. So now there's 10 brothers all together, including Yosef. Yosef is for sure not going to be part of the ban. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the victim. Mm-hmm. So now they had 9 brothers. You need one more to make the minion. So the brothers said, God, you're number 10. And they put God as number 10 in the ban. The halacha is, to undo a ban, you need the original 10 to undo the ban. Now, as long as God was a partner in the ban, and God, for whatever reason known to him, did not want Yaakov to know that Yosef was alive, nobody from that group would be allowed to break the secret. The problem was, even though Yosef was not part of the ban, as the 10, but he was in the pit. So he was automatically included in the ban of not telling anybody. So Yosef, halachically, was not allowed to tell Yaakov he's still alive. Because until God broke the ban, Yosef said, if God wanted Yaakov to know, Yaakov would have found out already. But Hashem didn't tell Yaakov. So therefore Yosef knew that Hashem still wanted the ban to be. And that second that happened, so Yosef said, then I can't tell him.
He knew.
He was there in the pit. He heard about it. Now, once Yosef saw that God broke the ban, how? When the brothers came down to Yosef, and Yosef had to reveal himself to the brothers. So now everybody knew that Yosef is alive. So now Hashem broke the ban, because Hashem made this whole
thing,
this drama, the soap opera unfold. So now that Hashem made it unfold, so now Yosef knew the ban was over, and therefore we'll learn later, the second Yosef sees his brothers, and I could say it now because by the time we get there, in a few years, even though it's the next parsha, I could say it again, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
So over there, Yosef, it's a very interesting statement. Over there later on in Vayigash, when Yosef reveals himself to his brother, you have to understand. Just quickly what happened. The brothers come down to Mitzrayim. Yosef says to them, oh, you're a bunch of spies. And the proof of it is if you bring down Binyamin. Okay? So finally Yaakov agrees that they send down Binyamin. The brothers come down with Binyamin. The first question Yosef asks him, how's your old father doing? Yeah? The brothers say, fine. Shalom, no problem. Baruch Hashem. What happens? The brothers are going home with food. Yosef sticks his silver goblet in Binyamin's bag. Mm-hmm. The brothers come back. They never went home yet. Right? This is all before they go home. Yosef all of a sudden says to the brothers, I'm Yosef. Ha'ed Avi Chai, is my father still alive? When the brothers came down, Yosef already asked them, how is the father? They didn't get any faxes or phone calls along the way. They didn't call home to know that Yaakov was changed. Why is Yosef asking now, Ha'ed Avi Chai? What's different than 2 days before when the brothers came down and said Yaakov is okay? They didn't have any more information than Yosef did. So what's Yosef asking now? Ani Yosef, Ha'ed Avi Chai. How could he ask such a question? What's the question?
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous question. The brothers answered him already, whatever they knew. So the Mefarshim learn, Yosef wasn't asking a question. Yosef was saying a statement. Now that I am Yosef and I am alive, and therefore the din is that an alive person you don't forget. Somebody that died, God decreed 12 months, you forget about them. But that's why Yaakov cried for 22 years. Nobody mourns a loss for 22 years. So the Medrash says, because God decreed on the dead body that you forget about them after. God decrees that you forget, that you can go on with life. But Yosef didn't die. So therefore, there was never a decree for Yaakov to forget. So therefore, Yaakov was mourning. So Yosef says to the brothers, now that you know I'm alive, Ha'ed Avi Chai, how is it possible that Yaakov's still alive? And what did he say right afterwards? Maharu valu elavi. Now that the ban is over, hurry up and go to the father. Because now Yosef had the obligation to tell Yaakov that he's alive. Before that, Yosef was not allowed to tell him.
Yeah, because it
wasn't. What? He didn't agree to the ban.
But tough luck. That's what I'm saying. The din is, that if you're part of a ban, when the ban is being made, and you're part of the group, even if you don't agree to the ban, you're bound by the ban.
10 people come to your house to rob everything of your house and make a ban on for you not to tell anybody. You can't say it to anybody?
You're talking about to Rishoyim here, you're talking about Tzadikim, I mean, you can't to Rishoyim.
Yosef was a victim, is that?
Huh?
Yosef was a victim.
Yes, it was?
A victim.
I'm saying he was a victim, but you can't have that 10 people will kill you and tell you, make a ban, you can't tell anybody.
Same exact thing.
No. Because they were tzaddikim, so they're banned. And the proof of it is Hashem agreed to the ban.
Yeah.
Hashem agreed to the ban.
He would not go with the deeper.
Right. That's why he wasn't able to tell them that he was alive.
Isn't this kind of Kabbalistic or something?
This is very simple, by the way.
It sounds very...
Why? You
know, because it sounds deep. It sounds like something you have to be at that level to understand the situation.
Well, you see here the greatness of a person... That you can imagine Yosef was Yaakov's favorite kid. Right? So you can imagine Yosef's relationship with his father. How close it was. And yet Yosef understood that if God says no, the answer is no. It doesn't matter what he wanted. I mean, it's a simple lesson in serving God. Yosef, trust me, was anxious to see his father. Yet Hashem said no. The answer is no. That's it.
Why do you think Hashem said no?
Because Hashem didn't tell Yaakov that he's alive.
No, but why you think God accepted to go?
Because Hashem wanted Yosef away from Yaakov for 22 years.
They say when you
are... No, but to advantage also the brothers, with their, to perpetuate the brother in their what they believed was right, or because you wanted them to understand that they did wrong.
Like we quoted once in Medrash, the beginning of Rus, it says over there, Nami goes doing this, and Rus is doing this, and Bayez is doing this. Everybody has their own agenda, and God is sitting back and just puppeting everybody for His agenda. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
God has an agenda. Okay? The story of Yosef ending up in Egypt, even though it looks like a whole soap opera, would make a good soap opera in today's world, nevertheless, this is part of Hashem's plan. Yosef has to be away from Yaakov for 22 years, and because of that, Yosef has to become a king, and because of that, the Jews have to end up in Egypt, and because of that, this is all part of the plan.
In the fame.
Just because the people in the acting are unaware of the director's plan, doesn't mean the director is going to change the plan.
This isn't everything what's happening to
Correct.
Israel.
Correct. Everything
plan.
Is happening is God's plan.
So
we could either be part of it.
I'll
throw an egg at you. either a raw egg, not a hard-boiled egg in ashes, a raw one.
Everything is God's plan. This
Correct.
Is no, but
the question is, are we part of the plan? The question is, are we part of the plan?
Yeah, but certain things we learn, we know, like problem of reincarnation.
Hindsight is 20/20 vision. Hindsight is 20/20 vision. Trust us, none of us have any idea of why we ended up where we do, or did, or will, why we end up where we... And it's all part of, we think we're acting it out, like we said many times, because this is where I got married, and this is where my job is, and this is, and this is where that is. Baba Mises. This has nothing to do with that. The truth is, because you got to be in a certain place at a certain time. So how does God get you there? God is not going to call you up on the phone and say, hi, Bojcik, I want you to go there because that's your place in the world. God doesn't do that. God makes you go to school here and meet this person here and go there. And then you should end up where you end up. In our eyes, it seems to be ridiculous. But David HaMelech doesn't tell me, Hashem etzadi gavi kanano. Hashem, the footsteps of men are planned from God.
Where's the free will in all this?
Not
the free will is, the only free will you have is in mitzvahs. That's it. That's where it stops.
Female version of other.
A fool?
Okay, nothing.
What did you say you there? Can you excuse yourself right
female
now?
Female version
of other.
Didn't you learn before that Hashem did not give Nevuah to Yaakov because he was sad and mourning? That's how we learn that.
Right.
If you're sad, that God doesn't
yes.
come to you.
Yes.
So God
but that God wanted Yaakov to be sad. This is all part of the master plan.
Because Yaakov decided not to be happy. Then God didn't.
No, but you could say it's God's fault. Who told him to take away his son for 22 years?
I mean, if Yaakov stopped mourning, then God.
He couldn't because he couldn't. Physically, he couldn't stop mourning because only on a dead person do you stop mourning. On a living person, you can't forget. Huh? Right. No, you didn't see the body. On a dead body, God decrees that after 12 months, you forget about it. Not, God forbid, forget entirely.
Right,
but as far as the mourning process is concerned, you're consoled after 12 months.
Isn't that why we still do, that's why we do Tisha B'Av, because the temple should be here.
Because we don't want to make it a dead thing.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, let's go weiter. So therefore, it's important to know that Yosef was 30 years old. Then it said, Yosef, oh, wait a minute, you want to ask something?
Did anybody ever tell Yaakov afterwards that what happened? Or...
The logic dictates that he finally found out what went on. But you see, when Yaakov understood at the end, the ends justify the means. When Yaakov Avinu at the end heard the story, he understood that this is part of God's plan. So why should he get angry at his kids? He knew that this is what God wanted to happen. How could he get angry at his kids? When a person saw that this is the outcome and this is really what Hashem wants, what Yaakov Avinu, the tzaddik, he wasn't going to get angry. He cursed their anger. He didn't curse them. He wasn't upset with them. He was upset with their anger. But them as people, as Yaakov saw retroactively, hindsight is 20/20 vision. He saw this is clear what Hashem wanted. Okay. Now, in the middle of Memvav, Yosef went out of Pari, and again it says Yosef went out of Pari. In Pasuk Memhei it says Yosef went out from Pari. What does it mean now again? And he went out throughout the entire land of Egypt. And Mepharshim explained that this time it means actually Yosef Taka walked out. Yosef went out to check out the land. As a leader, he wanted to get a pulse on the land, you know. So he went out to check out the whole land to see what he was doing. One thing. Another interpretation is that Yosef made himself known to everybody. Another thing is, Vayetze Yosef lefnei Pari, he went out now on his own, not under Paro's jurisdiction. He mamish went out on his own. Okay, so now it says, Vatasa orders b'sheva shnei asava. The land started making, producing. in the 7 years of plenty, lekmatzim, by the handfuls. That's simply what the pasuk means. It started making by the handfuls. So what does it mean by the handful? So Rashi says that they collected the grain fist by fist. Now there's one after another. Other people learn that each ear produced a handful of grain, which was in abundance, so to speak, a lot. Another interpretation, they say, like the expression hand over fist, was one after another. It just kept coming more. The Ramban learns that it means into, the kmatzim doesn't mean handfuls. The kmatzim, the Ramban learns, into the storehouses. See, kremitz in Hebrew is a handful. One of the avodas in the Beis HaMikdash, the flour offering, the guy had to bring X amount of flour. How did they bring a flour offering? The kohen went into the flour and took a kremitz. Kmitza was he took a handful, and with the thumb he brushed off the top amount, with the thumb he brushed off the bottom amount, and the rest was the handful that they brought on the Mizbeach. So kmatzim normally means a handful. So most mefarshim learn the kmatzim by the handful. The Ramban learns the kmatzim over here doesn't mean the handful, it means the storehouses. That they started storing everything into the storehouses. Vayikpet is called Eichel Sheva Shanim, and he gathered, it doesn't say who the he was, but the Ramban obviously says it refers to Yosef, Asher Hayu Be'eretz Mitzrayim, which is in Egypt. Now, the question is, why does it say they only gathered the extra food of Egypt? So there's different interpretations. Some Mefarshim learn that only Egypt had this abundance. So therefore, only Egypt did it. Other Mefarshim learn that the other lands, Taka didn't store. They weren't smart enough to store the grain and they didn't store it. Only Egypt did. Another problem over here, it says, they gathered all the food of the 7 years. So the question is, so what did they eat? If they gathered all the food, it says all the food. So some Mefarshim learn as follows. Some Mefarshim learn it means all the food that they're able to gather. But there was really more that they ate. The Ramban learns, no. It means literally. They gathered all the food to Yosef. And Yosef rationed the food even during the 7 years. See, simply people learn, Mefarshim learn, that everybody gathered a lot of food. They kept what they wanted themselves, and then the leftover food they gave to store. The Ramban learns that's not what happened. The pasuk says literally, they gathered all the food, then Yosef gave the food out even for the 7 years. Nobody did anything themselves over here. Says even dry food and... Okay. They gave food into the cities, or in the place that they gave food, meaning in the royal granaries that were all that Yosef ordered to be built in every city. Yosef was smart. Yosef didn't store all the grain in one place. He stored the grain all over the place. So he ordered them to build barns or silos, and then they put their food all over the place. But Yosef bought, and Yosef gathered grain, kechol hayom, like the sand of the sea, har b'me'ed, a lot, at kichod alisper, to the extent that they stopped counting ki'ein mispar. Simply, there was no number. Rashi learns, because there's no number to be able to count it. Now, what they did over here is as follows. Rashi explains, they gathered the grain, but they also took the ground, the earth, together with the grain, as a store, the preservative. They put the stuff all over the place, all over the land of Mitzrayim. And it says, they even stopped counting because there was no number. So the Mefarshim discussed, what does it mean? It says, Rashi learns, the guy that counted couldn't count anymore. It was pushing too much to count. Some say it was so intricate they had to be abandoned. And that was beyond human imagination. But like Mefarshim, not that the people were foolish, they didn't know how to count. There's pushing like for instance, when we speak about trillions and trillions of dollars. I mean, it's not that we can count it. It's just too much to count. La'avdol, they say that drug dealers weigh money. They don't count it. There's too much to count, so they weigh it. You know, they didn't know, like, a pound of $100 bills is X amount of money. So when they pay off in these $1 million deals of cash, you don't just count, you can sit and count $1 million. So they weigh it. Because you can't count it. It
takes less time.
It takes less time to weigh it than to count it. You could sneak sometimes $1 bills into
that was
the...
That my question.
Yeah. I know.
Look
what...
So where we learned
me and you asked the question because, you know, thieves think like this.
Great minds think alike.
What?
This is where we learn diversification.
Yes.
In your assets.
Right. They put them in different cities. You don't keep all the eggs in one basket.
Yeah, but now it doesn't matter anyways because everything is going down.
Everything's in dread. Okay, it says also the Mefarshim learn what does it mean came mispart? It didn't even pay to count. They had so much extra, they didn't even need to count because it was above and beyond. Like you count what you need afterwards, whatever comes in. So that's what happened over here. Okay, the next pasuk is a very interesting pasuk, and there's a lot of discussion on this pasuk. We'll see how much we'll cover today. Well, Yosef Yulat Shnei Banim. Yosef was born two sons. B'terem tavi shnasarav before the hunger years came. Asher yodalei asnas basvei tiferet kayanin. So it says in the pasuk, Yosef had two children before the hunger came. So Rashi says, why does the pasuk say before the hunger came? It teaches us a halacha, which is, by the way, a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. You're not allowed to have marital relations during the famine. Because the world is suffering, so you're not allowed to have marital relations, and therefore the pasuk is saying over here that Yosef gave birth to Yosef was born, okay, two children before the hunger came. So number one, the Radak asks an interesting question. Why does it say Yulat singular if it's two sons? So the Radak wants to say that it's a possibility that Menashe and Ephraim were twins. And this is a unique opinion. It says Menashe and Ephraim were twins. Menashe was older, but they weren't years apart. They were mamish twins. Okay? And it wasn't uncommon in Yaakov's family to have twins, because every Shevet had a twin with them, and, you know, so on and so forth. Now, the big problem over here, that the Mefarshim, he has two pages, solid Mefarshim on this, because this is a whole interesting question. There's a thesis over here, and Tesis over here asks the question, Levi gave birth to Yocheved on the way down to Egypt in the walls. And there's already 2 years hunger. And Levi came down to Egypt 2 years after the hunger started. And obviously, she wasn't pregnant with her for 2 years.
And in Israel was hunger too?
So the question, of course they had, there was a hunger. What do you think they came down to Egypt to buy food for?
Not to be seen.
Only at the beginning. But once the food finished, then they also needed, there was a hunger there. Even in Eretz Canaan. So the Tesis asks, this is a very interesting question, Tesis asks, how is it possible that Levi had Yocheved before, during the hunger, obviously. And here it says Yosef wasn't. So Tesis answers, remember when he says Yosef knew this, but Levi didn't. Okay, so Levi didn't know the halach, and Yosef knew it. Some of Hashem answer that it's not asur; it's only better. And Yosef was more religious than Levi. So the Mefarshim asks, what do you mean? Levi was the head of the Shevet Levi. What do you mean he wasn't religious? So Tesis answers. There's a lot of interesting answers. We're not going to finish them all tonight, though. Taisa's answer is a very interesting answer. There's an argument in Halacha. How many children do you get the mitzvah with? One opinion says two boys, and one opinion says a boy and a girl. Now, there is a Gemara that says, that if somebody doesn't have children yet, this din doesn't apply. If somebody was Mekayim the mitzvah of Pru or Vu, If you weren't mekayim the mitzvah pru or vu, then you're not allowed to have relations during the year of hunger. But if you didn't do the mitzvah yet, didn't do the mitzvah pru or vu, you're allowed to have marital relations during the hunger years. Now, Levi, there's an argument in the Gemara: is it two boys or a boy and a girl? Yosef maintained that the halacha is two boys. You already do the mitzvah pru or vu. So if Yosef already did the mitzvah, he's not allowed to have marital relations. Levi held that the mitzvah is a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. Levi only had boys, so he didn't do the mitzvah yet to pru or vu. So he's allowed to have relations, and therefore Yocheved was born. That's the way Tosfos answers. So there's a lot of various answers of what the difference was between Levi and Yosef, why Yosef maintained, and some Mefarshim say very simply, this didn't apply to Yosef either. Yosef technically would be allowed to have marital relations because he also didn't do the mitzvah approval. Huh? Some Mefarshim answer that. Some Mefarshim say, because by Yosef there was no hunger. In Egypt there was no hunger because there was plenty of food for the land. The other countries,
The opposite.
No, but there is something over here that says that because he was a king,
because he stored food.
Oh, yeah. He says over here, the Durana Chaskuni suggests that this criteria for abstention when Israelites are beset by the famine. Now, Yosef was not affected by the famine, right? But as far as he knew, Yosef thought that the Yaakov was suffering hunger. So Yosef thought that the Jews were suffering from hunger. So he refrained. But originally in Levi's house, in Yaakov's house, there was food originally. So therefore, only later did they not have food. So Levi knew that there was no hunger for Jews. They didn't know Yosef existed. And even if they knew he existed, he was only one individual, wasn't a whole nation. The whole Jewish nation didn't have a hunger. If the whole Jewish nation didn't have a hunger, Levi was allowed to have relations. There's a lot of interest, we'll leave
he
it for
now. He wasn't getting along with his wife.
No.